Thank you, and through the chair. I have not had that discussion with my counterpart at Halton, but I can take that away.
Okay. Thank you. In regards to slide four, how we determine allocated seats, so this isn't, because my understanding is that we want to maintain, is it still 50%? We don't want to go over 50% of students in a school in FI. Is that still the, or 60-40, is that what we're still, the percentages that we're working with?
And through the chair, yes. So part of our board motion in 2016 was that we'll strive to have approximately between 40% and 60% of students as a in the two languages as a balance. We do have some schools that are who fit in that balance very nicely, and some other schools that are feeling accommodation pressures.
Which is that sort of French immersion tipping this going over the 50% mark, or the other way around?
It is typically it is schools where with French with the French immersion population breaching over 60%.
Okay, and is that where you come up with the allocated seats? Because I'm looking at some of these schools, and then I know that their capacities are different, and I'm looking at Guy Brown and Mary Hopkins, but it's still the same 40 seats for each. So is that a percentage of the registration, or is that a percentage of the school taken into account?
Thank you, and through the chair. What the team, we have a French immersion system team that includes planning and accommodation, and we look at historical trends for each school. We look at attempting to stay within the 40-60 range, and we look at the overall utilization of the school and if adding a classroom would also add a portable, for instance, and that's where our numbers come from. The numbers you see for allocated seats reflect what we believe the school can manage in the long term, not just for grade one, obviously, but through grade one to grade five or six or grade eight, depending on the structure of the school.
Okay. And then my final question, I'm not sure whether, to the chair, whether I know this was a question from Don and something that Don and I have, talked about over the years. And I guess at a time like this, just understanding and not something that we need to learn here, perhaps it's something in the next report, but when it comes to equity, in the past, I know we've seen geographically where students for each school are coming from, the neighborhoods they're coming from or the areas they're coming from. But I think when it comes to equity and diversity, right, so are we serving all different types of students? And I know, I believe there's a breakdown on academic apply. Like, it's supposed to be FI, supposed to be for all the different pathways. So I'm just wondering how successful we are being with that, or is it mainly academic students, and are we looking at how to encourage maybe more diverse students to take FI?
So thank you through the chair. Thank you, and through the chair. Certainly, I can bring expanded data back into a future report. What I will say is that our secondary French immersion programming tends towards a college or university pathway rather than apprenticeship or a workplace pathway. So when I look at our course offerings and I look at the the pathways of the students, they are mainly a college or university pathway. When it comes to the larger question of who is taking French immersion, I want to assure the committee that there are no barriers for English language learners or students with disabilities or students who may potentially have some learning difficulties in entering French immersion at all. So we do have, and I think it's important to note, that several of our schools, including Bonetto, including Parkdale, and we've also moved a program to W.H. Ballard in grades 6 through 8 starting next year. They're actually high-priority schools. So we do have some of our French immersion schools within high-priority schools to make that make the program available to students in those communities.
And within those communities, are we seeing success with students with IEPs, for instance, in French immersion?
So I would have to take the question of success with IEPs back and bring that back to the committee. I could speak to my colleague, Superintendent Blair, on that question and bring that back to the committee.
Okay, great. I think that's all my questions. Thank you. Thanks. The chair mentioned that this is great to see this report. I appreciate this. I mean, and I know especially now with everything else that's going on. So we really do appreciate this report. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for those questions, Trustee Deese. I will move now to Trustee Miller. Any questions or comments?
Yes, I have a couple of questions. Thank you so much for the report. It's really nice to understand the various streams under the kind of French as a second language umbrella. I did have a question, kind of an extension on what Trustee Deese was just discussing. You mentioned, the report mentioned that we're seeing a drop in FI enrollment as the years go on for a variety of reasons. You know, families move, families have more than one child, and different age groups, you know, learning disabilities that kind of come up later. But I was just looking through the report. Are Westdale and Sherwood the only two high schools that give the diploma designation?
Superintendent?
Yes, and through the chair. Westdale and Sherwood are our only two programs with French immersion credit granting courses. I will just add, though, our students in those two schools also have access to e-learning courses in our consortium that might be delivered by another board, but students who are interested in getting their French immersion certificate at the end of grade 12 need to attend either Sherwood or Westdale, depending on, we've split the board into two large catchments for secondary French immersion.
Trustee Miller? Any follow-up questions? You may still have yourself on mute.
I totally did. Thank you. Thank you, Trustee Beck. Thank you for the clarification. Do we have currently capacity, enrollment capacity to extend credit granting to any other high school?
Superintendent?
So at this time, we have no plans to extend to another secondary school. The program at Sherwood is 5 years old at this point and continues to grow and be robust after starting after starting with just one cohort of grade 9 students coming in to begin with. So Westvale continues to be a relatively large program as well. We do not plan at this time to suggest opening a third program.
Trustee Miller?
If you could elaborate, what would make that decision something that we would consider? Like, would we have to see a different, would it have to be like community demand requesting it, or would it have to be a shift in enrollment, or is it entirely based on whether or not Sherwood can handle it? Because I know that I've sort of heard just at the very anecdotal level that Westville is quite full. Some students are sharing lockers type of stories. So my question is, what's the tipping point there where we would consider something like that if we have that kind of set out?
Superintendent, any follow-up there?
Yes, and thanks. A very good question. We do look at a few considerations in a question of this nature, and I'll begin with staffing. We do have a provincial shortage of French teachers, which is even more noticeable in secondary qualified than elementary qualified. So we would have to, in considering that move, we would have to consider if we have capacity to have students or to have teachers be able to provide programming to students. So staffing is one consideration. The next consideration is, would we be able to draw enough students into a program? Our number right now is currently around 700 students between the two schools. So by opening a third, do we actually start to limit opportunities for the students in the existing schools rather than expand opportunities for other students? The voice, and to the question around voice, we do have a French as a Second Language Advisory Committee, which comprises of community members and parents of both core French and French immersion students within the board, and they would be, some of their advice would go to a question like that. It hasn't been raised in my 2 years in working with that committee.
Yes, thank you. That's very helpful. I wanted to understand the long-term forecast potential there. Then my other question here is just, I know you mentioned the incorporation of a variety of French cultures in the curriculum. Is that specific to when we're teaching core French, or is that a specifically French immersion edition?
Superintendent?
Through the chair, actually it is both core French and French immersion, where intercultural awareness and intercultural competency is part of the curriculum.
Okay, great. And is that reflective of all Francophone cultures? So it would be African, Caribbean as well, and then basically, like, is the scope of it quite wide? Sorry, through the chair. Thank you.
And through the chair, it is meant to be global in its breadth, rather than again moving away from some of our experiences, which would have been very much focused on Francophone culture here in Canada and then in France itself. So we are looking at French Africa, the Caribbean, and Asia.
Okay, thank you so much. That's it. Yes, thank you. Those are all my questions. Thank you for all the clarification there.
Okay, all right. Well, I had a discussion with Trustee Danko, who was not able to come join us this evening. She is enjoying the great outdoors up north with her family, just getting a chance to be away. So in our conversation, she was very concerned about data and wanted to convey to staff that she's very grateful for this report, that it's something that she's been looking forward to for a long time in her role as trustee, and is very glad that it's come to us in the form that it is, and did have a few points that she would maybe want to see more robust data in the future. So the number of students that we have participate in Delft, for example, if we could look at that as a percentage of the total number of students in that group, that kind of a thing. So this is just for staff to take away. I don't need you to comment on right now. And she was concerned about learning about the makeup of the F5 student population. So Trustee Deeth, I believe, had touched on this. We would look at, are we being equitable with how the program is being implemented? So is there a way, and maybe Bill, you could answer this, is there a way that we could learn more about the makeup of our FI students? What backgrounds do they come from? Very relevant to the time that we're in actually right now, where we're trying to break down barriers and to make sure that everybody who would want to take advantage of this program is. Would you be able to comment on that?
Yes, and again, through you, Madam Chair, what certainly I could bring back, I'm thinking about two specific student profiles that I could bring back, and one would be students who are English language learners, and the second would be students who have an individual education plan. So I could, some of our enrollment data could be disaggregated according to those two profiles.
Okay, that would be great. Thank you. And I think, too, as we look forward to this report again next year, I believe, we would receive it around the same time, just more fulsome data on things like that, like IEPs. And so one more question. Let me just make sure I'm understanding it right before I speak it. Okay, so how this is another one of Dawn's points. How can we understand our French immersion students and where they go in relation to our core students? So and Trustee Deeth, thank you for bringing this up before. Do they go academic? Do they go applied? And I think Dawn's point is that she'd like to see us tracking this to see if everyone who continues in our FI program in high school, what is their pathway, and just to get a greater understanding of who is still involved. But we're looking, let me think, a few of us around the table are interested in looking at what other boards are doing. So I just wanted to get you prepared for that. There was talk of maybe making a motion to do that, but I don't know. We've got a lot on our plate right now, so it's not something we want to tackle right now, just because there are other more pressing things that we're currently dealing with. So that was it for John's questions. I just wanted to get you prepared for next year, perhaps. I have my questions. Let me just turn to those. Have we ever done a survey of parents when they decide to move their student from the program? So I know you had said that and even through conversations that I've had with families, that when they move their student out of French immersion in those early grades, that partway through grade one, grade two, grade three, that they tend to have not really anticipated the pace of the program, or their student ended up having a much more difficult time than they would have imagined. Has there ever been a survey to try and capture that data so we could work with that, Superintendent?
Thank you. We actually provide a voluntary survey to parents when they are withdrawing their child from French immersion, and the observations around why students do leave the program come from that data. We revamped the survey just this past winter to help us collect some more statistical rather than only kind of voice data from the parents. We are using that as part of our next steps in trying to understand how to strengthen French immersion programming.
Okay, thank you very much. I think, too, we would like to see that in a future report where we get to see some of the percentages related to the motivations for moving out of the program, as well as maybe motivations for opting into the program for the first place. I think that would be interesting, and maybe give us a clearer picture. All right, that was that question. Perhaps a little bit off topic, but kind of relevant to the time that we're currently in. I did wonder how we found our French immersion students make that transition to online learning during the ministerial order. Is that something that you'd be able to touch on, or would you need to take away?
Thank you. I can briefly comment that we did have some requests from parents to for support in terms of instructions for learning that would be in English and not just French, so they could support their children. Otherwise, I don't have a solid data set around that experience that I could share.
Okay. The reason I wondered is I know that in our information sessions, you've heard that there was a struggle for some teachers to adapt to the hub in doing work entirely online. It was a larger learning curve for some than for others who were already more familiar. So I didn't know if perhaps our French teachers were already familiarized with the program a bit more than not, and our students by extension would have maybe been more knowledgeable about it, and so that would translate into an easier transition when we made that back so many months ago now. Okay, well, I don't have any further questions. Thank you again so much for this report. I think that French is part of our Canadian identity, and that it's such an important tool for our students as they grow and they understand their identity as people who live in Canada. So I really appreciate this data and the work that staff has put into bringing it to us tonight. There is no motion on the floor. This was just a update. So I will now move into student learning and achievement, which I believe is Peter Favron.
Great. Thank you, Trustee Buck. I'll just take everyone to slide 10 in the slide deck. And I'll just add a bit of context that while this is an update report, it's an update report not like any other. This has been a very different school year, as you all are well aware, from labor action to the school closures. And so while our three goals have remained, with all students reading, improvement in math, and all students graduating, our ability to gather the relevant data to report back has certainly been limited because of these circumstances. The all students reading, with a target of 75% of our grade one students at or above the provincial standard by June, as reported in their June report card, this update, which typically happens in the spring, does not include, obviously, the final report card grades. And due to labor action, there was no term one report card. However, to the credit of our teachers and our principals, they did manage to gather information from our teachers about our grade one students, asking them how is each individual student doing in relation to where they should be at this point in the year. Each of our principals collected that data, submitted it to their superintendent. The superintendents collated all that information, and that's why we're able to say at this time that it certainly looked like we were on track for the 75% of students, because at February, when this data was collected, 78% of the students were on track to achieve a B. We will return to the program committee with the full report later in the fall, and that will include the June report card data, again with an asterisk beside it due to the school closure. It's worth noting that in all three of these areas of the strategies that we've put forward, the focus around professional learning was quite limited during this school year, at the beginning through to March due to the labor action, and then March onwards due to the closure. In terms of math, the minister, as you know, canceled the primary and junior EQAO assessments for this year. This particular goal is connected to the EQAO assessments as our way of comparing our improvement in terms of students in grade six and narrowing the gap with their counterparts across the province. We're really unable at this time to provide a progress update as to whether or not we were on track for that, because there'd be no way of verifying that information that the assessments were canceled. The one piece of data that we did have available was from the progress reports back in the fall, where teachers would indicate whether a student is progressing well, progressing very well, or progressing with some difficulty. And you'll see in the chart that a very significant number of students were progressing well or very well back in the fall. I will add that that hasn't in the past necessarily been an indicator of where the EQAO assessment lands. It is the only data point that we had, so we share it with you, again, with that pretty significant caveat. The all students graduating, we will say with some level of confidence that we are on track for our quite aggressive target of 83% of students graduating within 5 years by the end of this August. We do have data available to us around credit accumulation to date, and we feel that when we are able to finalize that data and then verify it with what the ministry provides to us at this time next year, that we're quite confident that we're on track to meet that target, which would be, again, a real accomplishment for our teachers and our students to, again, have over 80% graduating within 5 years. And just to note that when we do measure our graduation rate, we measure the rate by which students who started with HWDSB in grade 9 and then have completed with us, that would be the rate of graduation that we report back on. So that's the update at this point in time, and I'll turn it back to you, Trustee Buck, for any questions.
Okay. Thank you so much for that report. I understand how frustrating it must be to really not be able to give us a fulsome picture of where we're actually at. This year has robbed us of many things, and I guess this is one of those. It is one of those. Very encouraging to see that we're on track for graduation rates, for meeting that goal, and with reading and not available for math, but things were looking good. So, thank you for bringing this forward. I'll now turn to trustees for questions and comments. I will start with Trustee Archer.
No questions. Thank you for the report.
All right. Thank you, Kathy. Trustee Deese, do you have any questions or comments?
I just have a question in regards to EQAO. Before COVID and all this hit, there was rumbling from the government about maybe revamping EQAO or taking another look at it. I know, teachers are not always happy with it, and results can be skewed. And so there was talk. So I'm just wondering if we've heard any more or whether that's something our board would like to see is maybe as an opportunity, since we've missed EQAO this year, whether that we would whether request or push the government to make some changes to EQAO so I guess two questions is have you heard anything, and would this be an opportunity for our board to address EQAO?
I'll turn to you, Peter.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you for the question, Penny. So EQAO has been undertaking a comprehensive review that did start during this school year. It was paused, and it would be for a combination of things that it was paused. So we anticipate that review will continue. What will come of that review in terms of changes, we don't know. We'll await further direction from the government on that.
Thanks, Peter. And as part of that, is our board being asked for their input on this?
At this time, we haven't been asked for input or feedback. However, as I said, the review was still ongoing, in the midst of both labor and then the closures. So I would anticipate there would be opportunities to provide feedback both from school board and from the public.
Would it be appropriate to reach out to the ministry and request an update on where they are with it? Because, in all that's happened these last few months and beyond with job action and everything like that, there was a big disruption in it. So, but it'd be nice to know, what their thoughts are on it and where they're going and if they have a plan.
We could certainly ask at a staff level for an update on where the review is at, and then we can bring that back at a future program meeting.
Great. Perfect. Thanks, Peter.
Okay. Any more questions from you, Trustee Dave?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, I'll turn now to Trustee Miller.
No, I have no questions at the moment. Thank you.
All right. I did have one question. In light of what's happened this year, where even before the ministerial order, we were looking at missing data because of Ethereum due to the labor action, relying on it specifically for mathematics in these three goals that we have here, is there a different way that we could be tracking improvements in mathematics rather than relying solely on EQAO for that information?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Trustee Buck. It is a very good question. There is definitely something that we've been looking at. What might amount to the best way of measuring improvement in math. The challenge is in grade six in particular, grade three as well, is that there are five strands of math that are reported on individually at the elementary level in both grades three and grade six. We would need to select either one of the strands to be sort of representative, which isn't really in line with what the math curriculum would suggest, or we would have to develop some sort of a weighting where we look at the five strands, look at the grades within each of those five strands, weigh them accordingly, and come up with a different number, and then determine, based on that, where we're at. Sort of like an approximation to what you might get from the EQAO assessment. Because the EQAO assessment, it gives you one value for a student in grade six and how they're doing in math. And the way the assessment is designed each year is that they take different portions of the five different strands in math. In some cases, they may not even cover one of the strands in math in any given year, or they may give a heavier emphasis in other strands. That's how the assessment is provided, and you come up with a value for each one of the students. So it's something that Exec Council has looked at together with research and analytics over the years. Are there other ways that we could reliably measure? And again, we have felt that in terms of reliability, it would always be best to go back to using EQAO, because then we can also compare to, students in other parts of the province. The big challenge with it, as you pointed out, is, years like this when, we're not able to have access to that assessment. So it's a great question and one that we continue to ask ourselves, and that we don't have right now a better solution for.
Okay, that's fair. I figured it wouldn't be as cut and dry as just going to what a final mark is on a report card to really capture that information. I did have one more point. In regards to the third goal, all students graduating and having at least 83% of students within the time frame, which we're coming up on that deadline in just a couple of months. So I think this year would be not – I see here on the under that second – the third column, it says official data will be verified by the ministry and released in spring of next year. So that data will be skewed, would it not, when we look back on this year, in future years, we'll always have to have an asterisk beside it saying, yes, but due to the ministerial order, all students' grades were essentially frozen, based on what teachers already knew by the time we hit March break. I'm imagining we're not going to have too many where the mark would increase, as that's the only way that the ministry has allowed it to go, as we do online learning. So do you have any comments about that? Because I feel like we might hit 100%, I don't know, 95% this year for graduation, but there'll always have to be that little mark beside it saying yes, but we don't know if those students, if that year we would have actually ended up with that same number of graduates had we been able to complete the school year in a regular manner. Do you see what I'm trying to get at?
Yeah, thank you, Trustee Buck. So I would say that we're going to wait and take a look at the data. And there is a possibility that, you know, the values could be a bit inflated. There's also the possibility that, you know, students who would have otherwise have been able to, you know, improve didn't have that opportunity due to the closure. So we'll wait and see. Just a reminder that a fairly significant percentage of the students that would make up the 83% that are graduating have already graduated. So they graduated within a four-year period. What we're left with is the students who are in their fifth and final year of eligibility for this graduation value. And so that's a smaller number, and I don't know how much the closure will actually impact that number. So it's a fair question, and definitely we'll look at it to see whether or not there were any differing trends. But we would have to ask ourselves, were there students that would have been early leavers after March? And, you know, quite anecdotally, I would say it'd be highly unusual for a student that was on track to graduate in their fifth year to then mid-March, you know, become an early leaver. So I don't know if the closure would have impacted the results positively, negatively, or at the end of the day, really not a whole lot when it comes to our five-year graduation rate, at least.
Okay. Those are fair points. I really appreciate you going into that. I had forgotten about the 5 years. It wasn't that there was a lot of clarity you brought to that. So I really appreciate it. All right. Well, thank you so much for this report. It's going to be interesting seeing how this emerges in the trends for as it sandwiched in between last year and the coming year. That's going to be fun to watch. I have no more comments. So I will move to adjourn, and I will have Trustee Deese make that movement. All right, well, oh, and you know what? I didn't ask if there was anyone against. Anyone against adjournment? Speak now. Forever hold your peace. Okay.
We're good.
Hearing none, we will close the evening, and just everyone enjoy this heat and sunshine. We got out a little bit early tonight. Anyways, good night, everyone.
Thanks.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Hi, everyone.